to Iris FM, Scotland's social services podcast.
Hello and welcome to Freshly Squeezed, an Iris podcast which aims to squeeze information and inspiration from key influencers in social services in Scotland. Today I'm speaking to Jackie Irvin. Jackie is currently Chief Social Work Officer and Head of Safer and Stronger Communities in the City of Edinburgh Council. Jackie was appointed as the President of Social Work Scotland in May of 2018, and her tenure as President comes to an end in May 2019. However, as past President, Jackie will stay on as a key member of the Executive Group at Social Work Scotland. As Chief Social Work Officer, Jackie has overall governance responsibility for the quality and provision of social work services both within the council structure, children and families, and criminal justice. She is an integral member of the Integrated Joint Board in respect of the Health and Social Care Partnership in Edinburgh and has held the position of Chief Social Work Officer for over 7 years in both her current and her previous post. Jackie's previous positions were predominantly in children's services, but not exclusively, as she has been lead for criminal justice, community-based health services and adult hospital-based social work teams. Jackie, welcome to Freshly Squeezed.
Pleased to be here.
So you have quite a career in social services then. Tell me, did you always want to work in social services?
I think I was thinking about this obviously last night, and I think at 17 it's a really young age to decide what you want to do. So I can remember being at school, not being particularly clear, having enjoyed art and thinking of going to art school. But that probably, I'm a bit of a control freak, so the sort of lack of a definite income was something that kind of motivated me thinking, no, that's a bit too airy fairy. Don't get me wrong, love art and encouraged by people that go ahead and do that. So, and at the time, it was before there was a degree in social work. So there was only the certificate of qualification in social work, but I really wanted to do a degree. And Robert Gordon's in Aberdeen did a joint degree and a CQSW. So it was a degree in social studies, if I remember rightly. To be fair, and I spoke about this at last year's conference in Social Work Scotland, I had no sense of what social work was like. I'd never been involved, none of my family had, even in terms of old people, etc. So I think it was more just that idea of working with people. And I suppose a general approach to equalities. I always took up for the underdog and felt there were some real injustices in life. But to be fair, it was a bit of a gamble.
Right.
And it was a 4-year degree, and you didn't actually know if you were getting selected for the social work qualification until the end of the first year. So half the year was streamed to public administration, which I clearly knew was not my forte. So there was a lot hanging on a sort of whole day long process at the end of first year to get into social work. And luckily I got in. And my first, I suppose one of my first placements, ironically, was in Edinburgh, where I've now come back to work. Mm-hmm. And it was in Craig Miller in Edinburgh, and I thoroughly enjoyed it. So that was about 1987.
Okay.
So I think that was then reassuring for me that I enjoyed that. It was obviously a mixed experience in terms of your placement in a practice team. But that I just loved it thereafter, and I suppose I've never looked back.
Right,
so
okay.
It was the right decision. How I came to it was a bit roundabout the houses.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Good. And I suppose a lot of people, I guess, even myself, I went into an arts degree
initially
from school rather than, because again, it was difficult at 17.
Yeah, 17 I think is a huge pressure.
Can you tell me a little bit more about then from after your placement?
So after my placement, when I qualified in 89, I went down to London apparently just for the summer to work in agency work, and I signed up with agencies, and then I got a permanent job in the London Borough of Merton. Through that process, I was in as an agency worker and then got a job. And what was meant to be a summer turned into 2 years in London. Which was really fascinating, and obviously different legislation. So a bit of an adjustment, but not hugely. But then within the 2 years, towards the end of that, I thought it was so expensive in London at that time. Still is, but there was a lot of negative equity. There's no way I was going to be able to settle permanently. So I came back to Scotland, and I'm from Ayr originally, but I moved to Glasgow. And I've lived in Glasgow ever since. So that's end of 91, beginning of 92.
And do you still visit the seaside then?
I still, my stepfather is still living in Ayr, as is just one of my sisters. So yeah, I still go and visit the family. But Glasgow's really basically my roots. Mm-hmm. So even though I'm working in Edinburgh now, probably will not move through. And in fact, my daughter's about to go to Edinburgh University, and I've been told, quite frankly, that we've not moved through, in case we cramp her style. So, you know, I see my roots in Glasgow, really, and from there, a very varied career. So I've done predominantly children and families work, became a senior social worker, I can't remember when that was, but became a senior social worker about 2 years, 3 years after being in Glasgow, and then decided madly, well, not so madly, to take 2 years off. Well, it was meant to be a year to go travelling, and it was nearly 2 years. Come back when I was 30 and started again. And I remember, actually, people saying, because I was desperate for a job. I'd spent all the money that I'd saved up. And within about a week, I got a job as a basic grade social worker in Paisley. And I remember friends saying, gosh, that must be hard, you know, you were a manager before, and I'm thinking, well, no, that's why I came in to work in social work. I enjoy working with people, and I think you get a lot of people who progress up the ranks, what they miss is working directly with people.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. So I did that for 6 months, and then moved on from there and got a project management post in terms of looked after children. And then I was asked to come back as a senior social worker to the area team in Paisley, because they were struck for staff. And then I moved to Glasgow, and I kind of worked predominantly in Glasgow from then until about 2007, but in various jobs. So I went into planning after having my daughter, planning as in social work planning,
sure.
Planning and performance. And that was a fantastic experience for me. So it's not necessarily, it wasn't necessarily planned in the way that that's what I wanted to do, but the opportunity came up, and it was job share, and that offered me lots of opportunities in terms of balancing family and work. I think that stood me in good stead, though, because I then was kind of in planning and integration planning for a good four years. But I felt at that point I need to get back into more operational practice, and was keen on children's services. So I made a move to Her Majesty's Inspection of Education, and I was part of the Child Protection Inspection team for a couple of years, and that really got me back into operational social work. And then the story kind of, then I went to North Lanarkshire because they had an inspection coming up. So nice. Following that, became a head of children's services and chief social work officer. Mm-hmm. So have been,
so you have kind of moved up the ladder,
yeah,
which is natural progression, I suppose, given your experiences.
Yeah, and I think the other thing that was helpful, when I was in HMIE, you were inspecting various different local authorities. That gave you a really good insight and coverage of Scotland, from Shetland to Fife to, you know, East Renfrewshire. So I think when you work in one place for a long time, there's great advantage to that, but you miss, or you don't see what else is sitting elsewhere, and also the value of the work that's been happening in your local authority. So, I mean, I said this to staff in Edinburgh when I arrived after a wee while. People always think that somewhere else is doing it better if you've worked there a long time. But in moving to, you know, North Lanarkshire, Western Bartonshire, Edinburgh, what you're able to see and identify for staff is, look at all this great work you're doing. This isn't happening elsewhere,
sure.
Or it's not happening this well elsewhere. So that perspective was really helpful for moving around.
Mm-hmm, yeah. And as a person, Jackie, what really motivates you then to, say, get out of bed in the morning and to do what you do?
I mean, I think really, I've never really had a problem with motivation. I've got a very low boredom threshold. So it motivates me to go out and do a good job. Improvement really motivates me, and sort of striving. I think if I've had, I would say I'm generally a very positive person, and if I've had any difficulties, I can remember a period of working in a certain area where the difficulty I had was I was disillusioned by, there was a lot of game playing among management. And for me, I just saw that as fraudulent. You know, you're there to do a job. You're there to do a job for the citizens, for the public. And actually anything that gets in the way of that isn't productive, I feel quite strongly about. Sure. So people will, I mean, I know people find me very straight to the point and fairly direct. hopefully not in a rude or uncomfortable way.
Oh, I did.
But I think, you know, what you see is what you get. And I think when I have worked very occasionally with people where there's a bit of manipulation and game playing going on, that probably was the thing that frustrates me the most. So getting up and doing a good job and being collaborating with other people, working in partnership, that really motivates me.
Great stuff. Okay. And do you have a typical day?
No, it's probably the answer to that. And I think that's the other thing that motivates me. I mean, no day is the same. And as chief social work officer or anyone in a senior post within a council or partnership, you don't know what you're going into every day. And I tend to, when things go a bit awry or there's something happened that we've not planned, I tend to go very calm and think quite pragmatically about, right, what do I need to do first? Who do I need to tell? So I wouldn't say that's always been the case. I think with longevity and sort of experience that's come. But every day is very different. I mean, there are some parts of the job that you think, I don't remember this being in the job description. But you do it, you know. But that also motivates me.
Okay.
I think if I think back to area, when I would feel like moving on before, I think particularly when I moved from planning back into operational practice and strategic management, it was probably because it became a bit too routine and it wasn't challenging me enough. So actually the challenge of different issues and different experiences is what motivates me as well.
You like to have a sort of change.
And I think you like to see progression as well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And do you have a motto for life?
Probably along the lines of, for every cloud there's a silver lining, and it's about finding that silver lining. So I'm very sort of solution focused, and I would say even in my personal life, very rarely do I, get down or anything. And I think I think my daughter's probably frustrated with this, because if there's a problem with an issue, I always try and find a way of solving it. And my daughter will sometimes say, "Mom, there is no solution. This is just it. This is just what it's like." If there's a discussion we're having, whatever. So I think my modern life would be, for every cloud there's a silver lining, but you need to find it or make it.
Lovely, thank you. So what book or blog would you recommend to listeners?
Well, I'm probably not very IT literate in terms of blogs, and my failing is I've got a dreadful memory for authors, films, film stars, books. To the point where I really frustrate my family, because I'll say, that thing, that film we were, and they're like, no. But so the most recent book I've read, which was recommended by my daughter, was The Road by Cormac McCormack.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
I used to read avidly when I was younger, and I now really only read on holiday. So I don't even read on the train commuting, because I'm too busy working. And I find if I read at home at night, I fall asleep. So holidays is when I consume books. But I loved that book because it was very dark and very end of the world. But the relationship between the father and the son was just fascinating. And so there was, I suppose I really loved that part of it.
Did you see the film?
No, I haven't seen the film.
Yeah,
no.
So the film, that was, again, very harrowing. Harrowing, very moving.
Mm-hmm.
It's fantastic. It was really nicely put together.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you like music, Jackie, but do you have any some music for motivation?
Well, this is again going to show my age probably, but I would say my music for motivation would be things like The Jam. So Paul Weller has always been my long-term fan. And in fact, I got tickets last year for my birthday to go and see Paul Weller with a friend and my husband and her partner. And we were both all commenting on how old he looked, and then I thought, hang on a minute here. this shows me how old I am. So, I mean, again, I'm not good at remembering music, but my husband is really into music, varied variety, as is my daughter. And so I kind of get into music that will not remember what they're called. But I am really motivated by music, although I don't listen to music when I'm on the train or travelling.
Right. Okay.
It's really just at home. It's really strange, and I think that's probably just because I struggle with my phone and IT, and it's just far too much.
CD
yeah,
person.
You know, I can do online shopping, and that's what I do on my phone and Sudoku. So,
right,
yeah,
okay.
But no, I find music really uplifting. We've always got music on in the house,
mm-hmm.
and I love that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
brilliant. And who or what are your inspirations in your career?
You know, I was thinking about this question, and I think I've. There's not one person, But the people I'm drawn to, or if I think about who as a line manager, who have I worked for, who've taught me lots of things, where you at the end of 2-3 years you go, actually I've progressed, but I've progressed with the support of this person. So I've been lucky to have a number of managers who fall into that sort of bracket. But I suppose if I think about why am I inspired by them, it's because of their progressive attitude, that it's always about improving. It's an improvement focus. It's not this is enough, this is just enough. It's always about what can we do better, challenging people's kind of, I suppose, expectations, and supporting your staff to think out of the box, to be innovative, to be creative. Mm-hmm. So they're the kind of people that I think have inspired me.
Yeah.
And there are, I would say there's a small handful, but it would be wrong to mention them, I think, in person.
Yeah. I guess like improvement itself is probably a little bit of a challenge in the current climate, is it, in terms of resource and capacity?
It is, but I think what we've had to deal with reducing budgets in the last whatever many years is just doing things differently. And I think we used to, you know, if you think back 15 years ago, 12 years ago, there was probably a presumption that to do things better, you needed more of a resource. And I'm not saying that we've got enough resource just now. It's not what I'm saying at all. There are significant challenges in terms of particularly social work resources, I would say, and particularly in relation to social workers. But I think we've shifted our thinking from that, if you give me more, I'll do better, because actually that wasn't always the case. Mm-hmm. And, you know, in looking at some areas of practice just now, and I'm involved in the Children and Young People's Mental Health Task Force, more doesn't always mean that you get it better. It is about the system that you design and how you make things more accessible to people or easier to access. So that I think, and I think that's right, that we should be challenging ourselves in that way.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
And what one piece of advice would you give to those working or considering working in social services?
I'm actually speaking at the newly qualified conference at the end of the month, so I've sort of started taking some notes about that. And I think my one bit of advice, and this is probably in preparation for speaking to the new qualified social workers, is make sure you've got support and actually professionally demand support. So we were looking at our bit of survey work we've done in Edinburgh recently about supervision, and the outcomes were good. You know, the feedback was good, but there were areas for improvement. But I kind of strongly feel that you're a professional no matter what level in the organisation you are, and you've got responsibility to ask for the support you need, as well as making some demands for it. Because without that support, I think it's a very difficult job to do.
Do you think the manager's job is also difficult to do in that respect as well?
Well, it is all the way up the top, really. And I think, I suppose, you know, the further up you go, you know, you should be more self-sustaining. But I still know where I get my support from.
Mm-hmm.
And whether that's through, you know, friends who I would use as a bit of mentors, which I do. You know, whether you're able to get accessible to coaching is really helpful to give yourself some time out of the rush, busy day job, to take that time and reflect, and support, if it's done in the right way, should allow you to do that.
Mm-hmm.
So that would be my main, because it would be wrong to pretend that it's an easy job. It's not, but it can be a very fulfilling job. I mean, I've never regretted being in social work, and can't see myself doing anything else. But it's really important that you've got sort of family support, got your colleagues' support, you know, a good team. I think I remember my first permanent job in London, and I still think back, I still talk about it. I was talking to our social work practitioners group recently about that. I can remember what I learned from the people that sat opposite me, around me, in my team, and the support that gave you just in growing and sort of furthering your horizons and understanding. You know, you don't come out of university
ready
to practice. You come out ready to practice, but you need to, I suppose it sounds a bit awful, but you need to use the people around you and choose some colleagues that you know you've got a lot you can learn from them,
mm-hmm.
as well as the, you know, the support and understanding that not every day is going to go well, and there are going to be challenges that you have to face, and take the time to reflect on them and seek, I suppose, some inspiration from what you would do the next time.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting there, because I think I was thinking more about the traditional manager-practitioner relationship as opposed mm-hmm. to having a team of colleagues who you can get,
I mean, the practitioners network in Edinburgh is really well attended. I've been to two sessions now. My predecessor, Michelle Miller, was very... It was one of her driving, issues that she felt the strength of a practitioner's network. And you see it, and I go along usually for the first part. I stayed for some of it the last time because it was a really interesting sort of questionnaire that we were doing with each other, well, ourselves, in relation to stress and how you manage stress. Mm-hmm. But actually to see workers coming together from a social work background, as social workers, not just social workers, third sector, support workers, some HR people who had been in social work, the strength of support that they can get from those settings and again, it's important, that's time out of the very fast, full-on, demanding day job, time that you can take to actually think a bit about yourself as well and your own health and well-being.
Yeah. Because if you're not thinking about that, you're not going to be able to support anybody effectively.
No. And I mean, I do believe in being very, fulfilling your task to the best of your extent. I'm very rarely bored, and there's always something else to do. But you do need that wee bit of time. And I find the commuting to Edinburgh and back, I find that really good time for sort of mm-hmm. thinking about my day ahead, preparing, winding down at the end of the day, thinking what am I going to do tomorrow, and kind of giving work its place before I then go home and give my family their place.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's almost like physical exercise being on the train, isn't it? It's still
is.
Movement.
Yeah, that's right. Almost.
Okay, Jackie. So, if you had to choose one thing, now this is a thing rather than person, that you couldn't live without, what would that be?
I have to confess, I was talking to my husband about this last night, and he probably came up because I was thinking, I can't think of one thing. I mean, I can't think of my phone, the TV. I can't think of it. He said, your hot water bottle. And he's absolutely right. Well, I go everywhere with my hot water bottle. Not everywhere. I nearly took it to work this winter when it was a bit cold. But, if I go to a hotel, I've always got my hot water bottle.
And it's an interesting thing to think of taking with you, because people don't take them out.
No.
And
no, well, take
people
it.
People talk about it, but they don't actually do it.
No, so I take mine with me. Not everywhere. But I'm a hot water bottle girl, summer, spring, winter, so... usually gets flung out of the bed, but it's just, I think it's a comfort. Yeah. I think also I was brought up abroad, so in very hot climates, and I remember coming home when I was 11 to the winter, and two things, being really cold, never having experienced really that cold before, and hating itchy right. jumpers. I think it stems from that I'm just always concerned that I might be cold.
Right, yeah.
So that's my thing I couldn't do without.
Fantastic. Okay. Great. Well, thank you so much for sharing your insights with us today. As you know, this podcast is called Freshly Squeezed.
Yep.
So I ask all my interviewees at the end of the interview, how do you like your juice? Do you like it smooth or with juicy bits?
Oh, smooth, definitely.
A smooth juice.
Definitely, yeah.
Smooth it is, Jackie. Jackie, you've been freshly squeezed today. Thank you for your time.
Not at all. Thank you. It's enjoyable.
Thank you for listening to Iris FM, Scotland's social services podcast. Visit iris.fm to download a transcript, listen to more episodes, or subscribe to the podcast feed. This recording is copyright of Iris. It's released under a Creative Commons license, which means it may be copied and reused for non-commercial purposes.